welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Well, hello, Jennifer, and welcome back to campus. I've got to say, you know, yesterday it was windy and cloudy and awful. And the moment you step on campus, just 24 hours later, it's sunny and beautiful.
Cause and effect?
Correlation. Who knows?
We can't do causation necessarily. Maybe we can do correlation.
There you have it. Well, hey, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much. Hey, I've been wondering if you've been doing any painting recently. I know you're a painter and you enjoy doing that.
I love painting. And in fact, over the summer, I started to learn how to use pastels, which is very difficult. I have not. Turns out my day job has been keeping me pretty busy even into the nights. But I hope to return to that maybe over the summer if there's a little downtime.
You love to paint. You've taken painting lessons even.
You wouldn't know it by looking at the works.
But you're a math guy. Like, I don't know if I would necessarily put those two together, but They cohabitate within you.
Math and art go together. In fact, I see myself more as an artist than as a natural scientist.
Really?
I relate closer to, in my own thinking, an individual engaging in art than a biologist or a chemist, really. But the truth is, of course, they all stem from the liberal arts. I mean, you know, the liberal arts, I have to remind people, because they don't think of math and science as being part of the liberal arts. And of course, the liberal arts originally derived from the quadrivium.
Whoa. Time out. Quadrivium.
Yes.
I need a little explanation.
Well, that's why you have me here.
Excellent.
Otherwise, you do the show by yourself. But the quadrivium, which was, you know, a long time ago in ancient Greece, there were four areas of study that made up the quadrivium. And they were music, astronomy, arithmetic, and geometry. Let me say a word about each. So geometry meant, you know, the study of shapes, like in high school geometry kind of stuff. Arithmetic really meant proving theorems. So kind of like the first, like the Euclidean stuff where you actually prove something. So it was basically, arithmetic meant advanced mathematics. Music, you know what music means, although I want to come back to that. And then astronomy. Well, if you look at these things, geometry is math.
Uh-huh.
Arithmetic is math.
Uh-huh.
Now, astronomy is really the geometry of the sky, of the stars.
A lot of math in there.
So there's this basically math. And then music, if you even look at the word music and its original derivation, it comes from really ratios. And it was the ratios of the strings that the Pythagoreans were noticing. So the quadrivium was really math, 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 and math. And that's what grew into the liberal arts. So science and math are, in fact, the cornerstones of the liberal arts. Well, which is interesting because you think of humanities and liberal arts in the same breath. They're not. The humanities are a part of the liberal arts.
Okay, wait. You're totally shaking up my internal course catalog in my head. All right. Wait,
you're probably not alone. You're probably not alone.
So say that again. And we know that's good because learning is all about shaking things up and making things uncomfortable. So say that again. Humanities and the liberal arts are not the same.
No, well, the humanities are within the liberal arts.
Okay.
But a lot of people think of humanities and the liberal arts as synonymous.
Oh.
That's wrong, because the liberal arts were built on math, 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 and math.
So the math is the root of all things.
Well, of
good.
Course, according to this commentator.
Well, you know what's interesting? I'm remembering back to you. You told me in a previous episode that you fly.
Yes.
You know how to fly. And you said it's all math.
That's
right. You said
true.
To me, flying is all math. So
well, yeah.
We were talking about the invasion of math into the world.
But it's interesting because now what you know, people are thinking about, at least thoughtful people, about is, you know, how to connect the natural sciences along with the rest of the liberal arts. Because in some sense, they have, I think, there's a perception in the country that they kind of have been teased apart. And really, they're integrated. And getting back to the art thing, so coming back to art, I mean, if you think about some of the things that people study in the natural sciences and where that leads you to, you need the humanities. You need the social sciences. You need the fine arts. I mean, here's a real example. If you want to become a doctor, an MD doctor.
So if you want to go to med school.
You want to go to med school. I think one of the best things that you should do and you should want to do is to take art history.
Now, why is that?
Okay. Art history teaches you how to see.
Okay.
And then when you really sharpen your ability to see, then you can actually metaphorically even see things that aren't physical things. You can start to see things. So when I have a surgeon cut me open, I don't want them to look inside my body and see what they think they should see. I want them to see what's actually there. And that skill, the ability to see reality, is something that is enhanced by all of the liberal arts, including art history. And I'll tell you something. Here's an exercise. I'm not going to ask you to do it.
Okay.
If I say to you, you know, draw a face.
Uh-huh.
Here's what people will do. They'll draw an oval.
Uh-huh.
And then on the top of the oval, they'll put a pair of eyes. On the uh-huh. bottom of the oval, they'll put a mouth and so forth, a nose in the middle, right? If you that's because people look at people and see what they think they're supposed to see. If they see what's actually there, you notice that the eyes in a human being are actually in the center of their head. They're equidistant from the top to then to the chin. And so that's where the eyes go. And that's why these figures always look so weird when we try to draw them. But it's seeing what's there. And that's what's required for being a good MD.
And actually, if you think about sort of that analysis, that observation, that really cuts across a lot of areas. You know, if you take journalism, don't you want a reporter who's at an event to have highly powerful observation skills to be able to not just get a narrow slice, but get a big slice of what's going on?
Psychology, communication studies, history, theater, English. I mean, all of these things bring added richness to everything. And in fact, even the MCAT exams, which sounds so painful to take, you know, to get into medical school, now there is actually a sociology component. So it just shows you that even in the medical arts, people are seeing the importance of the other, you know, areas and the rest of the liberal arts to come together and really engage holistically in human thought. It's all human thought.
Well, you know what's so interesting to me? This is making me think about all of the times where when I was in school and I hear students now, oh, I'm an English type person, or I'm a science person. I can't do math. I can't do this. I can't do that. I think we often put ourselves in those silos of, you know, I'm a humanities person, or I'm a languages person, or I'm a math person. We don't even give ourselves like
the
some
space.
Room to roam there.
That's right. I mean, and take a look at some of the things that are happening at Southwestern, for example, 3D printing. Where uh-huh. should that live? That's a technology
Ooh.
Thing. That's a science thing. And yet it lives in fine arts.
Yeah.
And so these things, human ideas today, environmental sciences, where does that live? Well, that lives basically everywhere. In fact, it's all around us by definition. So there are these questions, ethical questions. I could go on for this for hours. One of our biologists actually says some really interesting things at the beginning of her intro to biology class, where she's a scholar who does original research, cancer research. And she gives her first year class actual cancer cells. They actually start doing original research in the first year labs.
Wow.
Yeah. And when she hands them these cells, and, you know, first year students are basically just high school plus, right? This is in the fall. So uh-huh. they really are just high school
brand
students.
Brand new.
Brand newly minted high school graduates. Mm-hmm. She gives these cells to them, and she says, I want to share three things with you. This is Dr. Todd, by the way. She says, the first thing I want to share is that these are real cells that came from a woman who has had breast cancer. The second thing I want you to know is that that woman is no longer alive. And the third thing I want you to know is that when these cells are no longer with us, they're gone forever. And I mean, think about the ethics of that. Think about the philosophical elements. Think about religious implications of that. And it takes these very young people who could have been kind of flippant and saying, hey, let's just have some fun. Look at it. And all of a sudden treat these tissues of life in a very respectful, meaningful way. That's what we're doing at Southwestern in really, you know, bringing together the natural sciences along with the rest of the liberal arts. And I'm really proud of that because I didn't have that when I took biology.
That's a powerful, powerful experience. All right, let's take a little breather.
All right, it's getting too heavy.
Discussion.
It's getting too heavy.
I love
right.
it though. This is great. Those issues are really compelling. let's take a little time out and check out the new Puzzler. Do you have a new one for us?
I do have a new Puzzler.
I'm ready.
For you, of course. I always have. I'm chock full of Puzzlers,
you are,
as they say. It's a little scenario.
Okay.
It's a little scenario. So, so you're at a, let's say, a high school reunion.
Okay.
And whatever year you want to have it. And you see someone that you haven't seen in a long time and you're getting caught up.
Okay.
And the person says, oh, you know, telling about the person's life. Oh, I have two children. Now, I'm going to play this for you in two different ways. There's going to be two scenes, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to play it for you once, I'm going to play it for you again, and they'll be slightly different.
Okay.
First time, the person says, oh, telling about their lives. Oh, I have two children. One of them is named Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that's the end. Now we're going to start at the beginning again. I'm going to play for you the second version of that.
Okay.
Okay? So the person says, oh, I have two children. The older is named Jonathan.
Okay.
Okay, so there's two different scenes.
Got it.
Okay. The question is, what is the likelihood that your old schoolmate had two sons? And is there a difference between the two different scenes, or is the likelihood the same answer? That's the question.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to revert back to the conversation we've been having. I think I'm going to have to pull from many different areas too.
Brilliant.
Also, can I make one comment about this?
Of course.
Is it possible that I smell a red herring?
Well, I don't know what red herrings smell like, so I can't confirm. I smell that odor in the room. I don't know if it's a red herring or not. Thank you very much.
Maybe it's the red herring in my purse.
I'm here all week. Thank you. Tip your waitstaff.
But that is a great Puzzler, because the possibilities that are flying through my mind, there's one I can grab from the math arena. There's one I can grab from sort of the biology arena. There's one I can grab from kind of the sociology arena. I mean, I love that this is stirring all of that up in my head.
And liberal arts should do just that. It should be stirring up ideas in one's head. In fact, that's maybe a great definition for what the liberal arts are supposed to deliver if they're truly doing what they're supposed to do.
So just to close up here, Ed, how would you help somebody who, as we were talking about earlier, puts themselves in a silo and says, I'm a math person, or I'm a biology person, or I'm a, you know, English and language arts person, and doesn't see themselves in any other realm? How do you
I'm not creative.
Right. Or I'm not creative. Or, you know, how do you nudge them into exploring all of their full potential?
I think that one thing we have to do is just understand that language often separates us more than actually connects us. And that it's not whether you think you're a science-y person, or you're more of a humanities person, or you're more of an artsy person, or you're more of a this person or that person, but you are your whole collective self. And there are facets. You are multifaceted. And the more you explore, the more you find out those things that you're drawn to and those things that you find even more challenging. And I think both require further thought. Both require further study. If you're drawn to it and you're good at it, then you want to enhance that and become even stronger. And if you find that being a little uncomfortable or awkward, then in fact, that's the one that you want to engage in more to become more comfortable with.
Well, thank you, Ed, for always helping us expand our thinking and keep our brain sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Find out more at southwestern.edu. And keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find Higher Ed on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.